Are we talking about Star Wars today?
The Star Wars.
The Star Wars. Okay.
All right. Do you like the Star Wars? Welcome then to the Rancor Pit number 28, where we finally, after a long delay with the holidays, are giving you One End of This Galaxy, the other episode 3, mm-hmm. Another Universe.
Yeah, we're like the poor man's Watto in that we're going around looking and selling and buying all sorts of Star Wars memorabilia.
Even if virtually, we're going to...
Yeah.
I tried to get Eddie to go on board with just investing in everything that we talked about, but if you saw the Rancor Pit Live, our holiday gift buying guide special, you know that Eddie's tastes run into the highly expensive. So then the challenge was to talk him out of that. So,
no, believe me, that's live show Eddie, real life Eddie.
Oh, okay.
Tends to shop the dollar bins when it comes to action figures.
Yeah, oddly enough, pre-recorded Eddie is very frugal. Live Eddie, what's weird is the live Eddie isn't the virtual one, yet he's the one who's got like money to burn, like he's like some kind of guy who's been playing Sims for years or something.
You're good night.
So, with all of that now out of the way, and us back in the saddle, as it were, we're back on the Tauntauns or the Dewbacks or whatever else one might be riding when they like the Star Wars, or Banthas for that matter. We're going to pick up where we left off. This is our final chapter, our final episode, as it were, not of the show, but of our exploration of Star Wars collectibles in a very targeted way. Joining us this week again is our special guest, Warren Jacobson, who really cooked up some great goodies for us on the last episode of this arc.
Special brownies.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, they were very special brownies. They were made with leftover C-3PO cereal from the 70s.
Oh, gross.
And apparently you cook those up and you start hallucinating. And it's legal.
You hallucinate that Jar Jar is actually a good character.
Wow. Or you hallucinate giant rock creatures wanting to steal your breakfast.
Good.
Crunchy food. So, that's for those who remember the C-3PO's commercial.
But thank you for coming back, Warren. And,
yeah, thank you very much.
The last time you were on the show, that was definitely a memorable experience. So you definitely schooled us in the ways of the Star Wars food market, as it were.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Absolutely. We frankly had no idea there was so much to on the table, as it were.
To consume, yeah.
the truest form of Star Wars consumerism. But this time we're going to talk about, for those of us here in the States, these are the kind of things that we don't get to get our hands on as often, and if we do, we really do have to have live show Eddie level cash laying around.
Gosh.
You're never going to live that one down.
No, exactly. You're always trying to bring something unique to the show, and it backfires.
Now, I'm talking about like the Entertainment Earth has these Death Star rugs that are maybe about $50 or $70 or something like that. Eddie comes out with this Etsy rug that's, what, like a grand?
No, like $3,000 or something.
Yeah. Sure thing. We'll get a couple. That kind of ties the whole room together. But anyway, moving on to what we're talking about here is we're going to be talking about the international collectibles. Certainly, Star Wars is a major American film, but it had a major worldwide impact. And as a result, as we discovered in our last episode, there's all kinds of stuff we just don't get here. In the case of foodstuffs, it's because Pepsi hates their home country.
Well, we don't get it here because sometimes a joke doesn't translate well.
Oh, that's so true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dun-dun-dun.
And yet another joke that didn't translate well.
Wow. Were you going to say something, Warren? Or
Or how can you follow that?
I am just taking it all in.
Okay.
It's early for me.
Yeah, we had to get an early start today just to make sure that we made this happen for
and
you.
And this is the result, is the corny jokes and the one-liners.
Right. Everybody's a little punchy this morning, so... we wanted to talk about the wonderful world of international Star Wars collecting, because that's a sphere of Star Wars collecting that not everyone can get into, because it can be very pricey. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I'm racking my brain to think if I have anything. All of a sudden, every now and then I get this collecting bug, and all of a sudden, you know, I want to get a store display. And as a result, I have a Ultimate FX lightsaber Walmart store display hanging in the studio. And I don't know that I've got anything necessarily all that international. So this could be piquing my desire to throw some money that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Warren, just kind of quickly thinking about your collection, are there any like international things that you've either collected or want to collect? Just to kind of get us going on some stuff.
Well, there's a lot of things out there that are pretty cool. Of course, last time we talked about food collectibles, so I won't really go into that much this time. Mm-hmm. I do go after that stuff. I think what's neat about the international collectibles are the things that are either a little bit different than what we have here, or in some cases just completely different that we never got.
Oh, precisely.
So are there any like examples, like for instance, like with the DC Superpowers collection, like there was like that third wave that America never got, but they went ahead and produced them for like other countries. Are there specific Star Wars figures that were maybe of that same, you know, where they were produced there but not here, like actual characters that we never got? Or are they just all variations?
Well, there is certainly the one famous one, but I'll let Warren hop on that one, because I bet he's thinking the exact thing, the same thing I am.
Of course, they made a Blix for the Droids cartoon line.
Okay, I'll give you... I wasn't going to think of that one, because I hated the Droids cartoon.
Yeah, Blix was available only in Brazil, making it one of the rarest of the actually released figures.
Ironically, in the Brazilian Portuguese, Vlix actually translates to rare.
Really? Really?
and not even remotely.
Somebody's typing that in.
Let me
Google
check
search.
On that. No. Don't be silly. Vlix are for kids.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, Warren's like, what am I? Really? I came here for a second.
I got up at 8 in the morning for this? I'll give you a moment to recover from that.
Wow.
So, yeah, Blix, and then they also released Yak Face.
That's the one I was... I didn't realize. I knew that Vlix was a very rare one, but I didn't realize it only made it to Brazil, which seems an odd choice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, some of the lines, especially the cartoons, Droids and Ewoks, and like the Ewok live-action movies, continued in popularity overseas or in international countries more so than they did here in the U.S.
They got
things that we really couldn't get here or... you know, just never would have sold here.
Yeah.
Spain, there was they did a whole bunch of PVCs and products for like the Droids and Ewoks cartoons. And we just didn't get that here. It wasn't popular enough.
Yes, true. The same thing kind of happened with the Star Comics. You know, they were producing Droids and Ewoks. Marvel was for their horrible Star Comics line that they did.
Oh, that's right.
That
yes.
was basically a ripoff of all the Harvey character comics.
Yeah, but, the Star Comics line was Marvel's attempt to have literally something for kids.
Yeah, exactly.
They wanted to have a juvenile line. You're right. A lot of it was just sort of like, let's try to do something cartoony, even though we don't really have a cartoon to base it on.
Yeah, instead of Richie Rich, they had Royal Roy and stuff. But
right. I remember Royal Roy. And I believe that's also where they really just played up Peter Porker, this Spectacular Spider-Ham.
Yeah, that gave birth to Peter Porker. But it's funny because Star Comics, I mean, the Ewok line ran a little bit longer than the droids line, but I think they did a lot better, like you were saying, Warren, over in the international markets, because over in the UK, not only did they get the same issues we got, but they started producing them in those hardcover annuals.
Right.
And they kind of went over better over there. So,
and that also goes into a lot of the way Andrew and I have talked about this on Hey Kids Comics. A lot of times in other countries, comics are published or released in a much different way than they are in this country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things I remember seeing, to go just briefly off topic, was a friend of mine, Steve, who's been on the live show and on this show too, had come back from a trip to Europe when we were in high school with some comics that were sort of anthologies. And they were like magazine size in some cases. It was just like the latest issue of four or five different titles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And a lot of times you'll see these weird little hardcover things being...
Yeah, they do that a lot in the UK. The Star Wars comics were magazine-sized, and they started off being released weekly. They'd chop the stories down to a smaller size and then add in some backup stories. So there's actually, like, if you include Return of the Jedi, there's nearly, like, 300 issues to the Star Wars line in England.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Whereas it ended with, like, issue 108 here in the U.S.
125. Yeah.
No, you know, he's right. It's like 107 or 108.
Oh, the Marvel line?
Oh, yeah.
No, it ran 125 issues, if I remember correctly, plus three annuals. I may be thinking of something else now that I give it a thought. But yes, it, but you know, it's interesting, mentioned Yak Face, and I think that's one of the most important, in talking about, you know, who didn't make it over here.
Yeah.
Because I went for years, because we didn't have the internet back in the day. We didn't have ways for information to be disseminated, and nobody was doing a lot of, you know, magazines or anything on toy collecting. That wasn't a thing yet. It got really big in the 90s. But one of the things that happened was I picked up this collecting guide, you know, one of the first Star Wars price guides to come out.
Yeah.
And it just had, it wasn't illustrated, it just had, you know, here's Yoda, here's this, here's that, and here's the value for Yak Face. And I thought, well, somebody screwed up. There's no such thing as Yak Face. Well, one of the things that it didn't tell you was, here's the price for Anakin Skywalker that you got in the States, which was the mail-away, and here's the price for Anakin Skywalker on the card with a collector coin. In which case, I would have said, okay, is there something I don't know about? Because there certainly was, and that was the fact that Yak Face had in fact come out and was even came out on the card. Do you know, Warren, if it was a mail away overseas in England as well?
I think Yak Face was just carded.
Because early on, all you could ever find was loose ones. But that may have been because no one knew any better, and most of the carded ones were quickly not carded.
Well, Yak Face was carded because he looked so young, and they didn't believe.
Oh, that's so true. That kind of young Joe Camel look.
that young Joe Camel look.
Yeah, have you seen Joe Camel lately? Hey,
oh yeah, smoking has not treated him.
Yeah, he looks worse than the Marlboro Man. But anyway, it's tragic. But you know, there you go.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think I had some of the same price guides you had, Cole, and I remember just seeing the name Yak Face and having no idea what the toy looked like.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of knew who they were talking about, or had an idea who they were talking about, even though I think we all would have called him Camel Face over Yak Face.
Right.
I don't know if they'd ever seen what a yak looks like, but it's generally more cattle-like.
Right.
But it was I remember just that bothering me for the longest, and then you started to see things like there was a big gigantic toy collecting newspaper that would come out, big tabloid size newspaper, I can't even remember the name of it. It was something probably very simple, like, you know, toy buying marketplace thing. And then you started to see the toy magazines coming out. All of a sudden, well, hey, what do you know? There really is a Yak Face. And I passed on Yak Face at $40.
What?
I passed on Yak Face at $50. Well, this is like, you know, you have to understand this is adjusted to the time period and the poverty level I was at the time.
Well, there is that, yeah.
I passed on it at $60. I passed on it at $70. And finally at $75, I said, okay, I have to. You know, it's obvious this thing will never go down in price.
Yeah.
So I actually bought mine at $75.
So you had to yak up the $75?
I had to yak it right up.
Yeah.
And nowadays I will, you know, if the topic does come up like now, I will yak about the experience as well.
Uh-huh. We were talking about characters that were released over there and not here, but... And obviously there's been a ton of variations. Well, one of the variations that has always captured my attention was, and Warren and Cole, you may know about this, is there was over in the in Germany, they had like a kids magazine called YPS, and I guess it was almost like your Ranger Rick or whatever it's called, or Weekly Reader, one of those where it had you know, articles about science and, you know, maybe a recipe and maybe like a one or two page comic strip. Well, YPS,
I bet one of the recipes was German chocolate cake.
It was.
Oh, excellent.
Yes, and 20 ways to prepare Wiener Schnitzel. And, but this particular issue was, it came almost, the magazine almost acted like a card. It was probably polybagged in reality, but it had a little bubble in the front, and it had a snowtrooper. And but on the cover, they referred to it as a stormtrooper, not a snowtrooper. And on the cover, there's a snowtrooper with like this little cat cartoon astronaut superhero thing. And so when you bought the magazine, it came with this snowtrooper. But the interesting thing is from what I understand, the mold is slightly different on him. Like as something about his body mold, maybe the cape is different. So it's actually a variation, and one of the harder to find variations of the Star Wars line. And in addition to that, it also came two ways. It came with a regular snowtrooper rifle, or some of them came with an Action Force military rifle, which Action Force, for those who don't know, is the G.I. Joe, you know, the UK version of G.I. Joe over there. So
wow.
Yeah, so then you had worlds colliding. You know, Star Wars and G.I. Joe were colliding in that respect. But yeah, that was always an interesting one to me because, you know, my big thing is collecting Star Wars comic books. And so that popped up on my radar because it was promoted as a German comic. And this it's like a comic magazine or whatever. And it actually has a snowtrooper illustrated onto their cover. So I thought, well, that would be a cool thing to have in my comic collection, but then of course I found out how much they go for. Don't want it that bad.
Well, in fact, Warren before the show brought another interesting point talking about the Star Wars action figure lines, and that was the fact that there were not only different packaging but often different manufacturer, as it were, or at least distributor. Overseas.
Right. Yeah, whereas we had like Kenner here in the U.S., especially in Europe, they were released by completely different companies.
Yeah, I believe that this, as the story goes, that Kenner, you know, was producing all this stuff and then would license out to other companies. So basically it was all churning out of the same factories for the most part, and it would just be, I guess, somebody else had to pony up for the packaging and pay for the production of whatever they were going to be selling.
Right. So in the UK you had Palitoy, and in France you had Meccano, and of course Italy I think was Harbert.
Wasn't Meccano a Superman villain? Oh, sorry, that's Metallo.
They're pretty close.
Well, again, it's the early hour, folks. I'm sure there's somebody who's going to be listening to this and just laugh at that because they're like, he's thinking of Mattel.
There may be somebody.
Yeah, that's Randy.
Emphasis on one.
Yeah, I know. But so, I think of all of those, Palitoy seems to have done the most with the license.
Yeah, pretty much everything you could get in the U.S. you could get from Palitoy. But they had a few different things as well.
Yeah, they had to one-up us.
Yeah, I think you mentioned this as being a favorite of yours. They had this really wonderful, huge cardboard Death Star playset.
Yeah, I love that thing.
Much coveted by Americans who were like, Kenner, you want to, you know, send a little love our way?
Something that kind of resembled an actual sphere as opposed to a tower.
Yeah.
Yeah, to this day, it's still one of the coolest things out there. It's a half-sphere cardboard playset. It had two levels and a gun turret on top, and I would love to have one of those.
And much the way that a lot of the stuff in that era was done, it's all a lot of printed cardstock.
Yeah.
And the graphics are gorgeous, and that's one of the things I really love about the stuff from that period, is that the graphics on a lot of these things are just beautiful. And, of course, you know, what to do if you want the Death Star Play Center, C-E-N-T-R-E, I should point out. Because it's like Austin Powers, it's English. Forget it, because they cost a fortune.
Yes.
And another interesting thing, you talk about the gun turret tower on the top. From images I've seen, it almost looks like it's utilizing abbreviated versions of the X-Wing guns, if not actual. I'm trying to look here and see.
Really?
No, that's about the right length. So these would have been the actual X-Wing guns. And,
so they were upcycling back then, I guess.
Yeah, a little bit. I guess, you know, to save production costs, because it's got a proprietary kind of bubble where Death Star gunners usually just have to sit in a couch out in the open. the Palitoy guy got a bubble. And there's a neat little crosswalk area that is open on both sides, even though one side faces a wall.
Okay.
If you look it up, we'll actually try to find some good pictures of it to put it up with this particular episode. It's a really neat, kind of clever design overall, with a lot of little sections. It looks like it was a heavy cardstock with some various plastic support pieces.
It's been a few years since I've seen visuals of it, but do I remember correctly, like the what was printed on the walls didn't really match what the Death Star interior looked like? Was it more kind of generic?
It's a lot more colorful.
Yeah, colorful. Yeah,
the floor panels look like somebody's kitchen in the 70s. There's kind of an avocado, a bone, and a kind of a charcoal floor panels or tiles. But there are some elements that do match. I mean, there's like a view screen that has sort of the weird little Death Star wall motif and stormtroopers going on at one end. There's a blast door that matches the style. One of the things, it's kind of like with the Sears Cantina playset. There's a lot of elements where you just have some guy standing there forever. In other words, there's a printed character.
Right.
Like some running stormtroopers, or stormtroopers way down in this elevator shaft that's your Star Wars figures can stand in the middle of, like they're hovering above everybody. But,
that's,
you know, it's a neat little way to, I think, probably for Palitoy, hit a price point that would be more agreeable to the British than, say, whatever ungodly amount of money you had to fork over for the Death Star.
Oh, yeah?
Back then.
They weren't as greedy over there?
or just, you know, maybe there was a plastic shortage with the war.
Oh, okay.
They didn't know the war was over.
No.
Even though they were part even though they were part of winning it was weird.
And we all know that wars are won with plastic bullets, so
he's right.
They had to really scrape up as much plastic as they could to build their tanks and everything.
They were built similarly to the Death Star with upcycled parts. But Palitoy also seems, I found an article on, they did a lot of advertising and some just super exciting looking ads of that made the toys look far more dynamic.
Oh, yeah.
Than the reality. And a personal favorite looks to be like some sort of comic book ad. And I actually recognize the style of the illustration, which I think was also used in the U.S. for like ads and Famous Monsters for some retailers. And what's interesting is, you know, it's like has the four cantina creatures facing you, and Luke in the X-Wing pilot outfit's kind of got his back to you, and he's sort of having to turn his head to talk to you, to tell you that these characters are new from the Palitoy collection. And Power Droid, R5-D4, and Death Star Droid also have their backs to you.
I'm looking at it. That is kind of
unusual. So, yeah,
it's unusual.
The sort of rule of thumb is everybody face forward.
They had the proper Snaggletooth, not the tall one, too.
Yes, exactly. Mm. And I wonder if they even got the little one, the tall one, rather, in England. And here's another ad with C-3PO packing heat.
And, oh, of course!
And R2 apparently doing some illustrations. But yeah, Palitoy is kind of a unique one in that they did a lot of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess if we go from the east to the west to the east, rather, Takara seems to be the king of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
As far as
Godzilla?
He's the king of monsters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, very important distinction.
Gotcha.
And Hirohito was the emperor of Japan during the war. So that they're into the history lesson.
Yeah, I was going to say, a little history lesson there, kids.
You never know what you're going to get. Oh,
for that one kid that listens to our show.
The one history buff. So, Warren, do you have much familiarity with Takara's lines?
I don't really specialize in it, but they did put out a lot of...
Of course not. Nothing can be eaten.
Exactly.
Eat this. No. Okay, I'm not interested.
They had a lot of neat things, including some die-cast figures and vehicles. They had some small stuff. I wouldn't say as small as Micro Machines, but they did have some small vehicles and figures. And then they had 6-inch die-cast figures, which were pretty interesting. And then they had some much larger things that were pseudo-model kits, kind of like Japan is known for. With some of your figures like C-3PO, and they had a couple different X-Wing fighter kits, which I was actually lucky enough to get one of those. It's the Transforming X-Wing.
Really?
And this was basically a plastic X-Wing. It was smaller than the Kenner toy, but, you know, still pretty good size. And it was actually modular, so you could pop the wings off and reattach them to different places on the X-Wing.
So you could do the entire alphabet.
Yes, actually.
It would be like the cheerleading X-Wing. Give me an A!
The YMCA version of the X-Wing.
Oh, yeah, so true.
Yeah. So it was
pretty
neat.
It did come with a leather jacket and hat.
But it fired missiles and came with like a figure and an R2 that you could put in the cockpit. And it was really pretty neat between the had vacuum metallized parts and a stand that it would sit on. And so really, really pretty interesting. And I guess they were... Of course, you know, big into the model kit idea where you can put it together, and the action features like the firing missiles were pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing the C-3PO that they put out. He kind of has like this weird kind of come here, give me a hug type of stance.
Was he like Dr. Evil? You know, what am I, freaking Frankenstein here?
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much. And he looks a little bit more, it almost looks like the C-3PO from the animated cartoon, but he's all gold. It's a little bit more simple, a more simple design of C-3PO.
And it was also one of the interesting things is the Takara had 3PO and R2 figurines that fired missiles.
Yeah.
R2 had this kind of little hole about dead center, and 3PO,
that's not a missile.
Yeah, apparently fired a missile from that midriff hubcap of his.
Again.
Again, yes.
So, just to go along with your top C-3PO card.
that's so true. Oh, that was no missile. You see Ben there, that's no missile. And I'm not going to tell the boy what it is.
What I like about that missile firing C-3PO is that his eyes were painted red.
Oh, yeah.
So,
he was like in mad mode.
He had this whole Terminator thing going
exactly.
on before Terminator even existed.
That's where Cameron got the idea of that, the fever dream during Piranha 2.
Oh, wow.
Clandestine recut. Also, Takara, what's interesting is, you know, you have your die-cast metal, you have your plastic stuff, and apparently Takara would like any medium available was open season. I discovered they had, like, you know how they have those wooden model kits where you could make, like, a dinosaur skeleton or some facsimile of a tropical fish or something like that by, you know, layering wood? They actually had these, you know, pop it out of the piece of balsa TIE fighter and presumably other kits like that.
Really? Like a Pine Derby TIE fighter?
Precisely, yeah. And boy, you know, when those things caught fire. You could, like, you know, fly it around the house in the winter and then, like, you know, crash it into the fireplace.
Yeah.
Really piss off mom and dad. But, yeah, it's an interesting take on the TIE fighter that apparently for some reason also had like a little siren or something at the top. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I'm looking at that now. They did a land speeder and X-Wing and R2-D2 also. So that's pretty cool. Actually, I didn't know about those.
But why limit yourself to plastic, wood, and metal when cloth is available as well?
Mm-hmm.
Because Takara apparently also jumped into the fray with the ever-popular claw machine industry.
Oh, yeah.
Because claw machines, you know, you'll find them at Chuck E. Cheese here. In Japan, I think it's not uncommon to see them on every street corner. And one of the things that Takara did in Japan was have basically these little plush, a really freakish C-3PO.
Freakish how?
It's got this sort of weird little, for one thing, it has one red, one blue nipple, it appears.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why they felt the dots on either side and the nipple.
One was hot, one was cold.
Hot and cold running nipples, indeed. You have a very, I don't know, like popples looking Chewbacca.
What? Okay. You got to post that on the website too. That is insane.
The R2-D2 almost looks like Inflato R2 done in cloth.
So does Chewbacca turn inside out like the Popples did? Where he rolls up into a ball?
I think you turn him inside out, you just get a bunch of filling.
Okay. So he doesn't fold in on himself.
No,
then.
He just looks like a Popple. He's just trying to infiltrate the Popple camp. And then you have Angry Luke with freakishly large eyes.
Thought you were going to say, Luke, that looks like a Cabbage Patch Kid or something.
Well, he's a bit tubby because of the necessity of kind of the cloth approach. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, apparently these were like the some claw machine toys. And, you know, you're talking about a country where the claw machine is so popular that if you're so inclined, you can try to use a claw machine to get a live lobster for your dinner.
What?
And this, I know, it rare it is that I will say something that isn't apocryphal on this show, but that is actually legitimate. It is called an EB catcher, if I'm not mistaken, and it is a claw machine that the claw is suspended over a big tank full of live lobsters.
Wow.
And you thought it was hard to catch that Fred Flintstone you had your eye on. At least he isn't going to crawl to the other side of the box while you're trying to grab him.
Yeah. You better hope not, at least.
Yeah. Yes, that only happens with the Chucky plush doll. But then, of course, if you do manage to capture that one, he'll cut you.
He'll cut you.
So go ahead.
I was going to say, some merchandise that really always interested me, and it is international, was the merchandise that spawned from the, hopefully I can get this right, the George Lucas Super Live Adventure Show. Did I say that correctly?
I think that's right. It sounds very familiar to me.
Okay, we'll just say it's correct. You know, and what that was a tour. It went touring around, I guess, Japan, where the story was, and again, this is something I'm just trying to pull off the top of my head, but it was, the character was like a little girl that found a magic wand or something, and this wand took her to the different galaxies or the different universes of the Lucas universe, Star Wars, Raiders.
You know far more about that than I do. I'm aware of some of the souvenirs.
It came on my radar because of all the Indiana Jones stuff that spawned from it. But what I didn't realize until later, that it also infiltrated the Willow World, American Graffiti, and
wow.
I think Tucker.
Because there was that one part where the Harrison Ford drives up in that yellow truck next to Luke in the land speeder and challenges
yes.
him to a race.
Yes. Uh-huh.
In
uh-huh.
my version.
Yeah. But then they end up both getting beat
up
by.
Just now.
They both end up getting beat by Indiana Jones, who was driving the cargo truck. You know, so.
Well, actually, both of the racers were eaten by one of the two heads of the Ibersis dragon.
That's a Willow reference, isn't it?
That is a Willow reference.
Okay, I guess I wouldn't know about that.
Lucky.
So, Warren, do you have any tales to tell of the Super Live Adventure Show's spectacular bonanza, whatever it's called?
Not really. I don't know much about the story, but I know a lot of the souvenirs. They mm-hmm. were the Star Wars or Lucasfilm fan club was basically hawking them all through their catalog for several years.
Oh, yes. That's why I knew about that.
Okay. I didn't realize they were getting the left. I think I remember them getting some of the posters, but they got actual merchandise too then, I suppose.
Yeah, there is a vacuum metallized lightsaber, and I want to say maybe some plushies or something.
There was a Yoda that they produced that you could get at the show, and it was the same Yoda that you could get at the Disneylands over there in Tokyo.
I know that. So that's another good point, is like foreign Disney Star Wars.
Yeah, it was a plush body with like freakishly large feet.
Yes.
And a rubber or plastic head, I'm not sure which. Like the head sculpt was really nice. Everything else was just kind of so-so.
Yes, you're right. It was a Super Live Adventure Show.
There you go.
There were a variety of lightsabers available with either the vac metalized handle or just kind of regular.
Well, they had one. I don't know if you may be able to classify this as a lightsaber, even though it didn't have like the actual laser blade. It was a lightsaber handle with like a blue flashlight thing with a Vader head on top of that.
Yes, indeed. That is a...
I guess it's more of a flashlight than a lightsaber, but I think they're promoting it as a lightsaber.
Yeah, they call it a lightsaber flashlight because the hilt of the thing is actually kind of invocative of a lightsaber.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it has a completely useless flashlight in that it basically looks to have a spinning disc that would project light around in a disco Vader kind of.
Yeah, and the Vader head was kind of like those candy topper heads that you would get on the tubes or something.
Very much like, only looking strangely not exactly like Vader.
Yeah.
It almost looks like a knockoff Vader.
Yeah, it's my understanding those are very popular among movie theater workers and airport ground control operators.
Absolutely, yes.
That's where all the extras ended up, was at the Japanese International Airport. And they also, an odd thing that got spawned, and I don't know if this was mass-produced, but I know like some people have really tried to track it down just for its unusual subject matter. I guess Panasonic was one of the sponsors of the show. And in the story, there's like this little strange little robot that doesn't really seem like he would fit in the Star Wars universe. And I think his name was Sparky. And maybe someone can confirm that.
Wow,
Sparky or
Sparky?
And he had
that
like...
That was Speed Racer's mechanic, I think is what
and
you're...
Oddly enough, now I think about the design, it's almost as if they took the hate ball from the new movie, chopped his lower part in half and added in like almost like a vacuum cleaner type bottom to him. And and just to make it even more goofy, the robot head actually has little eyes, nose, mouth, and I think he had glasses, if I'm not mistaken. So he looked very Poindexter-ish, I suppose. You know, like that, not Poindexter, but that little...
That's what we call Poindexterous.
I guess so. He looked like that little chick on Foghorn Leghorn, really, because he had like the big round head and the glasses and all. But Panasonic...
This just gets worse all the time.
I know, it really is. And
this deal's getting worse all the time.
It would be really bad if I'm not wrong about his name and he's actually named Sparky, because that would be like...
I believe you are right. I have found imagery of Sparky.
Okay.
Sparky has a round head, radar dish ears...
Okay.
Yeah, he's like half remember, hate ball remember. With his little. Oh, that is. That's scary in more ways than I can possibly express.
Well, one of the items that some collectors have tried to track down, again, Panasonic was one of the sponsors. They produce, I guess, these poster ads that they would hang up about town that I don't think had anything to do with the live show other than the fact that it had Sparky and Wicket. And they're both Wicket and Sparky.
The Wicket.
They're both riding skateboards for whatever odd reason. So if you ever want a poster of an Ewok riding a skateboard that is licensed by Lucasfilm, it's out there.
Well, apparently it looks like the story goes that Sparky was some sort of genius... student robot built by Lucas.
Oh, of course.
Likely in the context of the show itself. But I'm looking around, I'm finding more and more stuff about Sparky.
Hmm.
And it gets more and more frightening as as you go along.
But of course they produce all the usual stuff like the pins. I know they have like some pins out there because there was one that was a Raiders of the Lost Ark pin for the live show.
Okay.
And there was a pretty cool, from what I remember, coffee mug of R2-D2.
Yes, in fact, I found imagery of the coffee mug and it features, which it is a coffee mug / bank.
Oh, okay.
The head, the R2-D2 head is actually translucent.
Okay.
I guess you can kind of get a feel for how much coinage you've thrown down into it. There's a mug handle on the back, and they cleverly designed a little extra space at the bottom down where the little third leg would be, just to kind of give you more capacity for the cup below his, you know, right down to the level of his feet.
And to help keep him upright.
Yeah. Because nothing's worse than a sideways mug. Everything's always... Your drink is always listing a bit.
Wow.
So I'm impressed that you knew so much about the live show.
It's only because of the tie to Indiana Jones and to Sparky.
Oh, of course, yeah. That explains your fascination with Sparky. And all this time I thought it was Speed Racer.
Yeah.
It all kind of makes sense now. I did actually find that there was a apparently a digital clock made in the form of Sparky.
Oh, wow.
In Japan. Known simply as Sparky's Clock.
Oh, really?
Which, often confused with the Burt Reynolds movie Sharky's Machine.
Sharky's Machine. Now, we can't talk international, and hopefully, Warren, you'll have a lot of info about these.
Okay.
We cannot fell. Oh crap! Whatever. We've got to bring up the Pepsi Star Wars caps with the little figurines and busts up top.
Oh yeah, we talked about that a bit on the food one because Warren had pointed out something I didn't realize that they had these big environments you could buy.
Yeah, you could put
to display them in, and I got curious and started looking. Like there's like this, you know. Under construction Death Star environment you could cram them all into, and Geonosian Arena.
Mm-hmm. Which, oddly enough, the Geonosian Arena was produced for the Episode 1 caps to be displayed. And it's like, well, okay, is it, maybe it's the Podracer thing. But it is, it looks like the Geonosis Arena.
Yeah.
But,
Warren, do you, I don't know if this ever came up on the show, but do you own any of the arena type? Or the display?
That I do not.
Or they're just out of reach?
I'm constantly shopping for them, but I've yet to find them at a good price. So I actually don't own a single Japanese Pepsi cap.
Oh, wow.
But have a few.
We will rectify that for you one day, sir, because I visit a lot of conventions locally, and I own a handful only because I found them, like, super cheap.
Yeah, I have. I think I have the complete set of the Episode 1 caps. It's either a complete set. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it is a complete set because I do have the little poster checklist that goes with it. But I don't have any of the original trilogy or Episode 2 or 3 ones. So I'd like to get a few of those because there definitely is one in particular I'd want to get, and that's the Gamorrean Guard cap because I love me some green ham and eggs.
Oh. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize the Gamorrean guards were monotremes, and they actually laid eggs. So it was possible, if you played your cards right, to have green eggs and ham.
Now, and the Jabba the Hutt cap is really funny because it literally looks like Jabba the Hutt is balancing on this little blue thing.
Oh, yeah. It's like he's sort of like insinuated himself up onto this pedestal.
I didn't know Hutts could position themselves that way.
And the interesting thing is they also, from the standpoint of collectibles going beyond just the food concept, Warren, are you familiar with the Real Sound bottle cap figures? I can't remember if those came up or not.
Sounds familiar, but I can't quite place it.
It looks almost like they're doing a miniature version of some of the Gentle Giant busts.
Okay.
Because the base is very reminiscent of that very generic base that Gentle Giant went with for their bust line, and thankfully have never tried to change. So at least you have some consistency. And except that the bases are in blue to kind of invoke the look of the Pepsi cap, but that doesn't have the ridges of a Pepsi cap, nor does it look like a giant Pepsi cap. But there are basically these figures with a sound chip in them, probably about 5 inches tall from the looks of things. They may be close to the size of the actual...
Those actually kind of sound familiar. I just didn't realize they had sound chips in them.
But apparently they were like a promotional thing for the Pepsi line.
Okay. Yeah, Japan was very good for having all sorts of promos and tie-ins and little collectibles. Just like the Pepsi caps, they had even a couple of years ago, they had some Pepsi Nex promos. Nex was a flavor of Pepsi.
Oh,
kind of
yes.
Like Pepsi 1, I think. I think it was more of like a diet or something.
Well, they didn't want to call it Pepsi 2.
Right.
So, because people mistake that for also in the spoken form.
Yes. They gave away little charms or cell phone straps that would come in a little poly bag that would hang over the cap of your Pepsi bottles. And they were shaped like little super deformed characters from
prequels. I remember seeing those. I couldn't remember what they were exactly.
Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff like that in Japan. a lot of times they'll call them cell phone charms because they'll come with a little loop so you can hook them to your cell phone or purse yes. or backpack or whatever.
Yeah, and in fact, there were some micro Pez along those lines that were produced
yeah.
in Japan.
Micro Pez.
They were like little micro versions of Pez dispensers. Of course, they didn't put any like micro Pez in the dispenser, but they were definitely.
Oh, that's interesting.
Little micro versions of Pez. They were miniaturized versions of the actual Pez dispensers because the Japanese have perfected the Dr. Schrenker technology.
It really?
Hanna-Barbera
only dreamt of. Dr. Schrenker, really? Wow.
And another interesting Japanese thing, it's funny because it seems like Europe and Japan seem to be the big thing. So, you know, thankfully Brazil, or was it Brazil got in there? Or,
right.
But Tomy in Japan had those little remote control Astromechs, which were about the same size as the 3¾-inch Star Wars figures.
Mm-hmm.
Except you had to cram a whole bunch of watch batteries in there, not included, into them and a stunted lightsaber. It was like the even more stubby than Yoda's lightsaber looking remote control. Mm-hmm. I actually have one of them, but I've never use it because I haven't ponied up for all the batteries yet.
Oh, you must have bought it from Russell then, because he never includes batteries in the stuff you buy from him. The Toyminator, because when I bought my R2 from him, he made it a point to, after I paid him for the R2, to open up the little remote control, take out the batteries, and keep them. I was like, really?
That's his display batteries. But no, unlike Russell, the Tomy didn't pony up from the outset. Probably because the packaging was such that most people would never take them out of the package.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And that sort of thing is just, you know, if you've got some of the Hasbro Star Wars figures that had the sound chips and stuff built in that you could, you know, press here. By about now-ish, those things are pretty much starting to rot. The batteries are rotting inside your toy. That's not going to last forever. And one of these days, it'll probably start to leach out from the plastic.
Yeah, I would think so.
And another interesting thing, going back to Japan, Celebration Japan, for their collecting panels, their little giveaway were these minted coins that invoked certain uniquely Japanese things like the Takara plush or the wooden TIE fighter. And that's one of those things. I'd love to have a few of those in the collection just because they're kind of unique.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those would be neat.
And I think so Celebration Europe did a similar thing because I think they had ones that were kind of celebrating the you know, various European releases of figures, so it had like the name of the line was in, say, Germany or
yeah,
right.
Please tell me Celebration Japan at some point used the imagery where they replaced the Rancor with Godzilla somehow.
I wish I could tell you that, because that would be that would be perfect. Yeah, the Celebration Europe coins had depicted certain vintage Star Wars character figures looking very much like they did as action figures, you know, with very dulled details, and would have the Star Wars logo as it would have appeared, like in Italy. I'll probably butcher this, but Guerra Stellari.
Oh, yeah.
La Guerra de las Galaxias in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's the Spanish one there, and so on. So that's kind of a unique thing as well. And also very easy to acquire if you want one. I think you can still get them on Amazon at a decent price, is the R2 and 3PO Macquarie 2-pack. Which was the only way until they did a big box set that was kind of a rip-off because it didn't have all the accessories with it, of the entire Macquarie line.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, anybody have anything else that just really springs to mind before we get into what we're going to cap this off with?
Well, I do have one other Japanese collectible that I just realized I had sitting here. Our mutual friend and collector, Jeffrey Carlton, brought me a souvenir from Japan about a year ago. And it's a cross collectible. It's a Japanese souvenir from a Japanese attraction called Tokyo Tower. Tokyo Tower is, I honestly didn't know much about it at the time, but it's a pretty well-known tower that looks a lot like the Eiffel Tower in the middle of Tokyo. Okay. And they have souvenirs there that are Star Wars Tokyo Tower souvenirs.
Interesting.
And so, in the case of this one, he got me a teacup, which has the Tokyo Tower on it, and then features a Death Star and Darth Vader actually walking an AT-AT like it's a dog.
Wow.
Nice.
And then it looks like there's a statue of probably one of the emperors of Japan or something. And so it's kind of just a very unique collectible that's specific just to Tokyo Tower.
Yeah, that is cool.
And that's one of the, probably the only thing I've ever heard of that is a kind of a regional collectible that Star Wars also.
That's pretty neat.
Aside from, I guess, some t-shirts I've heard of, you know, they're just kind of like Star Wars spoofs. But this is, you know, actually something licensed and a cross collectible, which is kind of unique in the international collecting field.
Absolutely. In fact, poking around a little bit, I stumbled on something that I was vaguely aware of, were some Episode 1 super deformed wind-up walkers from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those little C-shaped feet that sort of walk over each other to step over each other type of wind-up walking mechanism. And there's, gosh, like about a dozen of them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, about a dozen or so different styles. Including a weird little Darth Maul, where in the super deformed version, he has the what appears to be almost the full-length dual bladed lightsaber, but there's only like little nubs of red coming out of each end.
Yeah, that's what happens to lightsabers when the batteries get low.
Oh, you just get that little, it just turns into like a light eraser.
Nice.
Yeah, pretty much. I've got some of those wind-up toys myself. I think that was actually one of the very first international items I got.
Oh, wow. So, I suddenly feel like I've fallen behind on the international stage because there's so much out there I wasn't aware of. And, but, you know, speaking of the... Back real quick to the international... the European Star Wars was the Tri-Logo card is something that... set a lot of the European Kenner figures apart from their American counterparts, as well as certainly some of the packaging in other countries. Instead of being on a blister card, oftentimes the I think in Japan a lot of the vintage Kenner stuff came in little square boxes.
Right.
Yeah.
So you know, a lot of times the packaging differences can be tremendous. Tremendously obvious difference there. And then as we're closing out, there's an important kind of collectible that needs to be addressed because it's uniquely foreign. And we see that here in the States from as close as our neighbor to the south to as far away as Japan and other parts of Asia. And that is, of course, the bootleg knockoff.
Oh, yes.
And the bootleg knockoff, I think, is an important thing to address in the realm of collecting because there are a lot of people who enjoy tracking those down because there are no real, you know, nobody wants to admit that they've made that stuff. So there aren't a lot of real great price guides or things like that to seek these things out with. I know that Eddie and I both own some knockoffs from a line that was marketed as Galaxy Empire. Mm-hmm. And they were, I believe, probably of Mexican origin. Because it's not uncommon to see toys come out of Mexico where you'll see like a pack with Spider-Man, Darth Vader, RoboCop, and and maybe Cobra Commander.
Yeah, worlds colliding.
Yes. And
Eddie has a pretty unique bootleg that I think I ended up giving it to Vic for his collection. And what it is, it takes just about everything that was Star Wars at the time. It was, let's see if I can get this right, it was a Shadows of the Empire logo with, I think, a Death Squad Commander picture, but the figure was, I believe, Princess Leia in Bounty Hunter disguise. And not even a well-made version of that. So it was like, they couldn't even get to that matching up right. It was crazy.
Well, I remember, you know, you spoke of Russell and his batteries earlier. There was...
Russell and his batteries.
Years ago, before a mall here in Arlington had gone, when it really went to pot, before it had a brief semi-renaissance, it was just really had become this dirt mall. And I remember Russell and I going over there one time to look at these Mexican Episode I knockoffs, and they were just awful. I mean, most of them were coming off the blister.
Oh, yeah, they always do.
You could tell that the plastic was a lot harder plastic than is used in the States, and it was the
and paint. And toxic, probably.
Probably, yeah, and the paint looked like it had been used tester's model paint or something like that. So, you know, these were just awful. I decided not to bother because if they're going to fall apart on the card, all the novelty would be lost.
Uh-huh.
And, but we, Eddie and I both, I think at the same convention, wound up buying the Galaxy Empire knockoffs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I wound up with, what the Galaxy Empire did was, though, instead of having the same scale like these other Mexican knockoffs, they took the same figure and pantographed it up to a larger scale. So these are about, what, 5 or 6 inches tall?
Yeah, they're like almost He-Man size. I don't think they're quite like DC Universe size.
I think they were
size.
Trying to predict the Black Series, which
yeah.
is a decade or more away. But I have a kind of a purple-hued Power of the Force 2 Chewbacca. It's based on the very first 90s Chewbacca that came out,
mm-hmm.
the one that's yard-wide.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's even got a different gun. I don't think he even looks like any Star Wars gun.
Mm-mm.
And the packaging says Galaxy Empire and actually shows a photographic image of the Falcon and the Star Destroyer.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, that is called Roidbacca.
The classic Roidbacca.
Yeah.
I call that particular piece Crunchbacca or Crunchy. Because, you know, they couldn't call it Chewbacca. They'd get sued.
Because they couldn't get sued for taking the exact sculpt and just upsizing it.
That's right. And, of course, in Turkey back in the 70s, you know, like who's going to come prosecute in Turkey? There was the Uze.
Yes! I forgot about those.
Which Warren and I were talking about a bit before the show.
Yeah, they had a habit of releasing figures with different colored paint jobs and giving them new names. The most notorious, I guess, being the Blue Stars.
Yes, the Blue Stars.
They were snowtrooper figures that were painted a navy blue with bright yellow lenses on their helmets. And it actually turned out to be quite popular among collectors and fans. I did a quick search, and there's all sorts of custom-painted figures made those, and even people with life-size costumes of it now.
Wow. Well, what they don't realize, they were just trying to support their favorite college team. That's all it was.
Oh, of course. I thought they were invoking Galaxina with the blue star. Oh. But, and that's for, like, the one person in the world who knows what the hell I'm talking about.
Hit the same person that laughed at your joke earlier on.
That's right. This guy's a hoot. Yeah, they had the Blue Stars, and then they had, they took, like, the Emperor's Royal Guard minus the cape, gave him a sword and shield.
Oh, yeah.
And the helmet was gold or silver, and the body was generally black, and he was the headman.
The head man.
Which, given the shape of the helmet, is rather frighteningly ironic. But,
wow. That's how he got his nickname.
That's right. And ironically, I discovered in looking up some Uze, there was a board game. Again, I'll probably butcher the language here. Yıldız Savaslari.
That's exactly how you say it.
Oh, excellent. Which apparently there's Darth Vader, a very feminine-looking Darth Vader fighting Luke, who apparently has a silver hand for his his missing hand. You have Luke in the X-Wing outfit, a frightening-looking werewolf Chewbacca.
Oh.
An Emperor's Royal Guard or a headman, I'm not sure which. Neenum and Admiral Akbar on the packaging.
So Luke with a Cylon hand, effectively, I guess.
And the actual board itself has precious little to do with Star Wars. It doesn't even look like they're really ripping Star Wars off that much with the board. They probably took some, you know, formerly produced Uze space game.
Oh, maybe they were the leftovers from their failed Logan's Run board game.
Oh, could be.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks very much like the graphics you'd have on like a 1960s outer space guy.
Oh, okay.
Type of thing.
Or the UK Death Star.
And the funny thing is, you know, the sad thing is, if I wanted to spend the money on an Uze, a genuine Uze, it would be very hard to find because there's so many customs.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, it'd be almost impossible to find the real thing anymore.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Because how can you tell? It's all a fake.
Exactly. You know, speaking of knockoffs, one that I came across very recently, they are hilarious, and they literally invoke everything that is awesome about Mexican knockoffs. And these are called Mi Empire Loca S.A. So basically, they are...
It's my friends from the Empire?
Yeah. S.A. Crazy guys or whatever. And what they are, they're the Star Wars characters dressed...
I thought S.A. was your friend. Was friend.
Yeah, I guess. Sure.
Don't I guess sure me.
I don't speak Spanish. What are you talking about?
Obviously. I mean, I know we've talked about on the show how, like, you know, you were taken to the Spanish translated Star Wars.
Yeah.
And we're quoting... And we're reciting every line in English.
Yeah, that was my way of trying to get me to speak.
Means friend, not crazy.
Not Jedi.
Just enough. Yeah, definitely not Jedi.
But it's the Star Wars characters dressed as lowriders. Like there's a, you know, there's one with a stormtrooper head, and he's got the white t-shirt with the blue shirt over with just the top button buttoned and the khaki pants. There's a Chewbacca with the wife beater in khaki pants with the socks pulled up, you know, to his knees. There's some red character. I'm not quite sure who it's supposed to be. And my favorite is the three-pack of the three Cantina band members all dressed as mariachis.
Oh, my, where do I find this amazing...
I don't know, but I would... If I cannot find one, I'm going to customize my own.
Yes.
So, yeah, Mi Empire Loca S.A. Oh, and the artwork. It's just simple black and white artwork on the cards. But it's Darth Vader dressed as an S.A., you know, with the shirt buttoned at the top.
All right.
With the long khaki shorts and the socks pulled up. This is craziness. Oh. They're probably more... art custom figures than they are knockoffs, obviously, but genius nonetheless.
Okay, that's a good point, because there's a lot of artists who I saw, you know how you have the little good luck kitty, the little Japanese good luck cat?
Yeah.
Oftentimes depicted with a spring-loaded arm to wave at you and annoy
you. Right.
I did see where someone had done a... I think it was like a snowtrooper or something, like a very limited edition resin figure of like a little snowtrooper done in that motif.
Oh.
And it was so very well done, but, you know, they were only going to make like 100 of them or something like that so they could skirt that in. And as such, they were horrendously expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's these, especially nowadays, I think we're going to see a lot more like custom stuff being made in limited runs so they can get away with it.
Right.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The artist
Sucklord is big on doing a lot of Star Wars custom knockoffs that are pretty high priced because they are fall under the category of artwork. So Sucklord, yeah, you can look up his Star Wars figures. They're just they're quite a.
I think Sucklord's been mentioned here before.
Yeah, I think Andy and I are big fans of the Sucklord.
Oh yeah,
but
he's done the apparently Gay Empire.
Yeah, the Gay Empire, yeah, the Pink Stormtrooper. That's one of his bigger pieces. No,
and also, now that you mention it, Jason Chalker, a local artist in the Dallas area, who actually is responsible for what became the my mascot for the JCU, the lightsaber-wielding Jedi Paris Aurolophus, has done some custom... you know, limited run custom figures himself, like Pimp 2D2, and I forget some of the others, but apparently he's done the old Fisher Price Little People.
Oh yeah, he's done the
Suckass.
Yeah,
which was the Little People version of Zuckus, the bounty hunter.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God! Now I must own a.
Y'all really should. Oh, those are way out of production, that particular line. But you should really look at it.
Oh, wow. There's even like a, looks like maybe a Bobby Blakey style Slee Stack here.
Uh-huh. He's done some crazy stuff.
Good Lord. Now you've done it.
Before we close out, I wanted to bring up one item that I did come across over the past week in researching this stuff. And it's from Germany, and I'm going to butcher this too. And it's licensed, and that's the only reason why I'm bringing it up. It's Das Hebrium Spielt Verrückt. I'm sure I didn't say that right. And
no,
what it is...
You're right, I checked.
Yeah, it is, okay, good.
As far as you know.
It was produced in 2000 by Kinder, and what it is, I'm not sure if it's resin, porcelain, plastic, or what. It's hard to tell. It's probably plastic. But what it is, it's a land speeder. And the base of it is the Tatooine rock kind of landscape. And the figures inside, instead of being Luke and C-3PO, it's cartoon hippo versions of Luke and 3PO. Not kidding.
Oh, no, there's a whole line of cartoon hippo
Star Wars
figures. Yes.
So there's more than just this land speeder.
Oh, yes, absolutely. There was a whole... I mean, I think it even went so far as to have, like, Episode 1 characters.
What if I missed in my National Geographic viewing that I didn't realize there were hippos in Germany?
The hippopotamus was actually introduced to Germany during ancient Rome, back when it was Germania.
Oh.
So when Rome was expanding into Europe...
Uh-huh.
And animals from across the empire were often imported to other portions of the empire to die in the arenas. And as such, the hippopotamus was quite popular to this day.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, it carried forward all the way into World War II with Hitler's introduction of the Krieg hippos.
I remember that. Very.
Yeah.
That was worse than the fact that much of Europe was still using mounted cavalry into World War I. the Krieg hippos were perhaps the... I mean, to a man, they were, and to a hippo, they were slaughtered wholesale.
Yeah.
Just really one Sherman tank, and that was stewed hippo meat all over the battlefield. So with that, we should probably go ahead and close since we are running long, which
yeah.
I don't mind at all because this has just been a whole bunch of fun. Thank you, Warren, number one, for joining us and helping shepherd us through this.
Definitely.
Oh yeah, it's a lot of fun talking about international collectibles and bringing up world history. So
absolutely, yeah, we covered a lot of both ancient and modern history. We discovered psychedelic. So in closing, does anyone have everybody? What is your favorite? What would you say is one of your favorite or your favorite international collectible that you've encountered, desire to have, or just are aware of?
I'll let you go, Warren, unless you don't have anything right off.
I know for Eddie it's probably Sparky.
Well, my favorite collectible that I actually have in my collection is probably the Takara Transforming X-Wing, just because it's very cool.
That sounds too cool for words.
Very Japanese and pretty rare, and I got it at a bargain. But really, I mean, all the international collectibles are just so neat, and I like to try and get stuff from different countries, and that's pretty easy to do with the food collectibles, so it's just neat trying to get something from as many different countries as possible. It doesn't have to be something super rare or expensive, just something in a foreign language, even if it's something you can get here in the U.S., just an international version of it is just so cool to have. So
it
can be really, really fun to explore.
Especially if it's in a language you have no idea. It doesn't even have, like, the kind of, you know, like German, Spanish, French all use the same characters. But when you get things like in Vietnamese or Japanese, or even things, you know, where it's written in Sanskrit, it's kind of fun to...
Right.
You know, you kind of know what it's saying, but you don't.
Yeah, it's true.
Eddie?
Do I
need to stall for you a little longer?
No, I'm going to go with the Pepsi character caps, because, you know, ever since I started collecting those have been a big thing for me. You know, those are just so cool, and so much cool detail packed into such a small little figurine. So I'll probably go with that. And my Galactic War Vet figure.
Oh, yes, of course, the knockoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are really a lot of fun. Like I said, I've picked up a few here and there, just if they were cheap and caught my fancy.
Mm-hmm.
I by no means want to try to get them all, because some of the characters I don't care about. But I do, I like the fact I've got an Amas Amida.
Yeah.
That looks really cool, and somewhere around here I have a gilded C-3PO.
Really?
Yeah, they actually did like a U-3PO or TC-14. I'm not sure which it was meant to be, but it's just sort of painted silver. Mm-hmm. But they actually vac metalized a C-3PO for part of the line.
Yeah,
and I think for me, one of my all-time favorite... there he is. One of my all-time favorite things that I've seen ever, because it's so unique and so amazing that they got away with it, in a sense, was a company in England called Helix did a Death Star pencil sharpener, which was like if the Emperor had hired whoever painted the Partridge Family van.
Or Jackson Pollock.
to decorate the Death Star. Because it's the most colorful, vibrant... I mean, if you saw this coming, you'd probably forget your planet was about to be destroyed. Because it's just so festive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really cool collectible. I would love to get my hands on one of those.
Yeah. Don't be so proud of this colorful, technological terrier. Oh, who am I kidding? It's fun!
That was just their way of invoking happy thoughts.
I guess so, yeah. Plus, you know...
It was a morale booster.
It's also kind of like how they put the orange cap on the end of toy guns nowadays.
Oh, is that it?
This way it couldn't be mistaken for a real Death Star and get peace bonded like the Death Star model at the convention in Dallas a few months back. I think the 501st had this big model of the Death Star that they brought, and it actually got peace bonded.
Mm.
So I don't know, maybe somebody had a day off from the NSA that was working the peace bonding there, and
yeah,
they're accustomed to confiscating G.I. Joe's microscopic weapons because they're you never know.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta stay one step ahead of terror. So with all of that in mind, and with, again, special thanks to Warren for joining us so early in the morning. Thank you for Eddie for helping us make this happen. This was long delayed and well worth the wait. It's just been a blast. And with that, we will return in 2 weeks with more Simple Tricks and Nonsense. And you can see the very high-end, collectible-loving version of Eddie in 1 week on the Rancor Pit Live at deepelemonair.com.